Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfill those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, he's there.
Kane is the record. Here's Lucas Moura. Oh, they done it.
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Well, hello, everybody. We've been caught unawares because our modern technology leaves us now in not just the capable hands of Dan and a podcast, but all sorts of other technical possibilities, including being on YouTube and everywhere else in the world. So wherever you are, welcome along to the latest edition of the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Marcus Buckland, Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard and Tom Barkley of The Sun are here as well. We've had one game so far this season from the wailing and gnashing of teeth that I've heard from so many Spurs fans. You'd have thought we'd played 20 matches and lost 19 of them. Having said all that, there were real frustrations about Monday night at Leicester. Danny Kaye, where do we start with that 1-1 draw?
Hello, Marcus. First of all, that introduction was really kind of Alan Partridge at the dawn of new technology there. Getting to grips with YouTube. But this is a brave new world for us. You're right. So maybe some people are watching this now on YouTube, although I very much doubt that. So Leicester, it felt very familiar, didn't it? I felt it was a very encouraging and kind of impressive and enjoyable first half. It still kind of felt to me as though Spurs, for as much as they had all the ball, weren't creating great chances. They were creating kind of three-quarter or half chances, like getting into the byline and getting into the box and then, you know, not quite being able to create the space or find the pass to cut through Leicester when it really mattered. And then just when you kind of felt like Spurs were going to get a second goal and Solanke missed or shot the goalkeeper for the sort of third time of the match, Spurs lost a bit of control. Leicester were a lot more adventurous in the second half and they hit back. And from there, it was pretty scrappy for most of the kind of final half hour. And Spurs just kind of squandered, obviously, a lot of chances, but then they sort of squandered control of the game and it was a bit of a concern. And it did feel like a lot of games last season, although I had a look back at kind of all last season's fixtures and there wasn't a game that was kind of followed the same pattern where Spurs were really dominant and then kind of slipped in the second half. In fact, that's only the seventh draw under Postecoglou. So Spurs didn't draw that many games last year. But nonetheless, it kind of felt like it bore a lot of the hallmarks we saw from his first season. And I guess the frustration from those fans you mentioned on social media is that this is supposed to be a kind of new season where Spurs are going to get over those teething problems and be a lot more consistent and capable and kind of not show those same kind of issues that we saw last year. But, you know, what I would say in counter to that is it's August football. You know, it's incredibly early days. It's one game. And actually, Spurs could have been and probably should have been out of sight by half time of that game.
Just before I bring Tom in, I'm not very happy about being compared with Alan Partridge, but maybe I'll have a word with Dan later on. I mean, he threw it on me just as we're going live with a carefully prepared script. Oh, we're on YouTube and we're on Twitter and everything else. So never mind Alan Partridge. We have a proper production, please, Kilpatrick, next time.
Fair enough.
that's by the by. One of the things that has struck me, Tom, already this season, and I noticed it towards the end of last season as well, is Ange's body language. You know, okay, it's one game, and I take everything on board that Dan just said about Monday night at Leicester. But I saw this during the Bayern Munich pre-season friendly as well. He doesn't look to me like a manager who is happy. Well, he obviously isn't happy with what he's seeing. But it worries me that he is demonstrating too much negativity himself already. And now, am I imagining this? Or is there something from the top of the club straight the way down that already suggests possible problems ahead?
Well, first of all, Marcus, you work in live TV, so surely you're used to rolling with the punches with last minute sort of additions.
Yes,
so
Tom.
I'm not buying any of those excuses that you just gave us. And I don't know. One game, and I know that the abiding image of that match will be after Richarlison misses that header, and Ange, I've always seen it memed up many times already of him sort of slumped over, hands on his knees, down on his sort of, you know, looking down, disappointed for a good few seconds after that. But I don't know. I mean, that kind of speaks to his whole man of the people vibe, really. Like, he often reflects, the way he talks often reflects what people are thinking, and maybe the way he acts on touchline can be like that too. I don't know. You'd have to speak to the players whether, and they'd obviously never give you an honest answer if it really did bother them. But I haven't picked up on that as being something that's worrying. Maybe just from that particular moment, if you wanted to draw any kind of conclusions, it sort of hinted at Ange's frustrations with Richarlison's finishing at times, perhaps. But I don't know about that. It's two minds, isn't it? I mean, it was such an impressive first half display, barring, you know, except for the wastefulness in front of goal. Just the way they dominated, the work they had off the ball was really, really impressive. And I was sitting next to a colleague during the game going, are Tottenham really, really good here, or is it Leicester just quite bad? And I think it was a bit of both. But those sort of fragile foundations, as Ange put it last season, that sort of sense of fragility about the team, about the club, did kind of rear its head after Vardy scored. Suddenly, you know, Leicester looked like a team who were going to win it. And that is a concern. But Steve Cooper said afterwards that at this stage of the season, these first games, he's watched all the games this weekend and included his own team and Spurs as well, in the way that quite a few players seem more undercooked than they normally do for the first game of the season. Maybe that just speaks to Euros, that speaks to the way they have these long tours these days. But I don't think you can properly judge them yet till a few games' time in terms of their, you know, being completely up to speed fitness-wise. But I guess because Leicester, I fully expect to be sort of deep in a relegation battle. And I know it was the first game of the season and they're always going to be up for it at home. But I probably came away with a bit few more worries than sort of positives, despite how good they were in the first half.
There are three players I'd like to ask you both about on the Spurs team. First of all, Solanke, of course, who made his debut. Love to know what you both thought of him. Secondly, are you as worried, and I take your point, Tom, maybe players are undercooked, but I'm really worried about Sonny's form at the moment. And thirdly, how good was Maddison? He went off, of course, after about 70-odd minutes, and the Leicester fans love that. But there were definitely signs that he was close to his best again. So, Dan, just go through those three players, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I mean, Solanke, my view is, if he keeps playing like that, the goals are going to come pretty quickly. He obviously had three chances, the two headers in the first half and then the shot straight at Hermanson just before Leicester equalised. I think with the first and the third, he probably should have done a bit better. The second chance was a tricky one. He actually did quite well with it, kind of angled a pretty firm header into the ground. If it had been either side of the goalkeeper, I think he would have been diving, but it wasn't. So I think the goals are going to come for him. And he worked hard. We saw that pressing he brings. He linked up pretty well with his teammates. I think he created certainly an opening for Bergvall from on the edge of the box and a couple of others. And he'll have trained, what, 3, 4, 5 days with his new teammates. He hasn't really played for Bournemouth for, I think, 2, 3 weeks. So I think all those things considered, we should be encouraged, even though I saw a few people saying, oh, he was outshone by Vardy and it wasn't a great debut, etc. I think more than enough reasons for encouragement there. I've forgotten who the second player was now. Sonny wasn't great. I mean, he started quite well. He put that ball in for Solanke. And then he didn't look sharp, did he? There was a really loose touch in a good position late on when he felt like Sonny at top of his game would have just knocked it out of his feet and had an effort, and he kind of lost control of it. But I think, you know, I'm inclined to say, look, it's the first game of the season. There will be players who aren't sharp, as Tom's just alluded to. Let's see where Son is after 3-4 games, and then we can talk about being concerned about form. It was really one match. And then Madison, kind of on the flip side, I guess I can't get too excited about his form, having just said it's one match. But yeah, he did look kind of back to his sort of fizzy best. And I think it's been a long time, and you kind of forget what it's like to see Madison when he's playing like that, because the second half of last season was so flat from him. But it was like he played in the first 10 games of Ange's first season. He was really lively, you know, lots of those little kind of clever outside of the boot passes that he loves, lots of the balls into the channels. I think he'll enjoy playing with Solanke, and obviously he made the goal for Porro, which was very, very well taken, I thought. So really good signs there. He definitely faded in the second half, but you know, the great thing about the squad now is that players like Madison can fade, and you think, well, there's not just Kulusevski on the bench, but there's Bergvall and even maybe Gray. So there's options there. If someone like Madison runs himself into the ground for an hour, you've got a similar quality player who can come on and play the last half hour at the same kind of tempo.
Just my two thoughts, or two cents on those three players. Yeah, I think what was quite nice about Madison was he looked like he was enjoying it again. And it feels like it's been a long time since we've really seen that. And that when he's at his best, he really does feel like he's, you know, in his own words, you know, the man who carves the beef at a roast dinner, the main man, the man who revels in that position, you know, in that role. And
they were not his own words. He never said he carved the beef. He said he enjoyed being the main man at a roast dinner, but I'm now imagining him as kind of chief.
Okay. Was it about something like that? It was something like on England duty. He said something about carving the roast dinner. To paraphrase James Madison, then, apologies. Probably not the first person I've misquoted. Anyway, but he did look like he was enjoying it, and that's key, given he's had, you know, a really difficult 2024. And that bodes well going forward. Solanke, I couldn't agree more with Dan. Look, you've got to remember, he's a reliable and pretty consistent finisher, but he's not a Kane finisher. And I think they're going to be games where he is going to miss chances like that. But on the sort of balance of the amount of chances he's going to get for Tottenham, I think he will score more than he misses, and he will get a good return. And more importantly, he'll be in those positions whilst obviously putting in the work rate. So I didn't come away from that game sort of, you know, thinking, oh, you know, upstaged by Jamie Vardy, which obviously was often how it was portrayed. I was quite encouraged, really. Just didn't quite happen for him. Maybe other people disagree. Son's the more of a worry for me, to be honest. I mean, last season we talked at times about him being out wide before he got played through the middle, thinking, is he really still, you know, really up to it, I suppose, playing as a wide man in the Premier League on a regular basis, you know, given the levels that he set for himself, and sort of questioned that. Then he went to centre forwards, and it seemed to suit his game quite well. And then obviously he had the game against Newcastle where he ripped Kieran Trippier to shreds. So we sort of kind of reassessed it. Dan's right, we've got to give it a bit of time, but I do think to a certain extent they'll, you know, we're going to watch his progress now he's considered back to being a left winger again rather than a centre forward on a regular basis, and still see if he can be as devastating as he has in the past.
Yeah. Sorry, Dan, I know you want to come back. I'm worried about Sonny. I thought both against Bayern Munich and against Leicester. I forgot he was playing at one stage against Leicester the other night, and he just looks a little bit slow. You know, he's normally so sharp. He's so decisive. I hope it's just a little malaise at the start of the season. But I really, you know, I am, and I know it's early, but I am concerned about him. Sorry, Dan, what do you want to say?
I was going to just add something on Madison. I mean, talking of interesting Madison quotes, there was a line from him afterwards. He stopped in the mix zone and spoke to a couple of us, and he said, setbacks are setups for comebacks, which I thought was very James Madison and slightly David Brent. But it was in the context of his England disappointment over the summer, and he spoke very well on it. You know, I'd encourage people to obviously go to the Evening Stand and read that interview if you haven't yet. The point I'm trying to make is he actually seems like a guy with the bit between his teeth. He's obviously got a point to prove. He had a rough second half of the season and a rough summer, and he looks determined to kind of put that right now.
Hang on. Okay, so you now, he's accused me of being Alan Partridge. He's now accusing Madison of being David Brent. I mean, these insults in a very early edition of the new season does not bode well for any of us, I don't think.
Not ideal, but that quote does feel very much, you know, from the pressure makes diamonds kind of football sort of book of cliches. But they make sense, you know, like you can see what he's saying, even if it feels a bit like slightly torture.
Did Vicario's reaction to the error from Bergvall late on warrant, you know, well, some have had a real go at Vicario for laying into Bergvall when not saying anything to Romero after Leicester equalised. My immediate reaction, I have to say, was I thought Vicario, it was a fair thing to do. He's trying to show the leadership that we became accustomed to with Lloris. I think Bergvall's going to be a fantastic player, but he gave the ball away in a really dangerous position. And if Vicario hadn't made the save, we'd have lost the game. So I'm intrigued to know what you both think. Was that a sign of bullying against the younger player, or was it the right thing for the goalkeeper to do in the circumstances, Dan?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I think it was probably warranted given that Bergvall lost the ball on the edge of his box in the 89th minute with the game at 1-1, which could have been really, really costly. But also, you do sort of feel like he's an 18-year-old making his debut in the Premier League, and I don't know how helpful it is to kind of run out and yell in his face. I mean, the last time I remember Vicario doing that, he does do it quite often, but he did it to Sessegnon, didn't he, when he came on in that one appearance he made last season in the Cup, when he'd obviously, you know, obviously wasn't really up to speed, and he didn't track his man against Burnley down the left, and Vicario came out and gave him an absolute earful. And I'm kind of like, you're picking the easy targets, Vicario, here. Like, do it to Romero, maybe, when he loses Vardy at the back post. You know, run up and get in his face and see how it goes. But, you know, that look, I'm sort of being a bit tongue-in-cheek here. That's his job. He's showing leadership. It's a dog-eat-dog world, the Premier League. And, you know, if you're out on the pitch, you've got to be ready to deal with that kind of thing, I guess. And it probably goes down as a decent lesson for Bergvall, who I thought was pretty bright and lively, and I can't wait to see more of.
Yeah, no, he's exciting. And I think that the future is bright, but how often have we said that about Spurs? The thing that struck me towards the end of the game when Ange made all those changes and he brings on Bergvall and he brings on Gray and a couple of other players, you realise how much inexperience there is in the Tottenham squad. And with that in mind, I'm not sure that we could be that confident of having a stellar season. But, you know, I think we've got to keep the faith as much as we possibly can. We've also got to work out who's going to play in the number six role. Has a one-match ban been in sufficient punishment for Bissouma? Tom, what's Postecoglou going to do in that problem area?
Interesting, isn't it? I mean, Bissouma is someone who has shot himself massively in the foot with this situation because, as we talked about in the last podcast, Dan and I, yes, it's a one-game ban, but the sort of implications from Postecoglou's press conference that Bissouma is going to have to rebuild some trust with both his manager and his teammates suggested that it could be a bit of a longer road back. We all know what a great player he can be. And as you showed at the start of last season, how key he can be to this style of play. But obviously there are other options there now. We'll wait to see what happens with Bentancur. You know, thankfully, it sounds like it could be a lot worse, but you know, with a head injury like that, we wouldn't be surprised, you know, for at least from concussion protocols, if he was out of the game this weekend. And then you got an interesting dilemma. What was interesting, I thought, with the subs that Ange made is he was ready to turn to Gray and Bergvall, who all lined up to come on before Bentancur even got injured, albeit it ended up happening at the same time, is how willing and ready he is to give these kids a chance, even though obviously they cost quite a lot of money, so they're clearly talented. So by that rationale, I would not be surprised to see him, particularly in a home game against Everton, who've had, you know, obviously had a bad game last week. It's the kind of game that Spurs will be looking to win if he doesn't go with Gray from the beginning.
Bentancur is almost certainly going to be out of the Everton game because it was a concussion sub Spurs used, and he was knocked unconscious, I think, briefly, and he walked out. I saw him walk through the stadium on the way to the team bus, and he looked in good spirits. He was with Romero, but he had a massive shiner on the side of his forehead, like a proper bump you could see that was going to look a lot worse in the morning, I would have thought. So I'm sure Bentancur is now following concussion protocols back at Spurs, and and not doing contact training, and I'm sure he won't be able to play the Everton game. And then that opens the question of who comes in at number six. You know, does Basuma go straight back in, or is this a bit of a longer road back, as Tom alluded to, or does he put his faith in Gray? Obviously, Skippy's now gone to Leicester. I've got to say, as a wider point, I think Spurs have a bit of a problem there. I think we spent all of last season, or all the second half of last season, saying, hold on, Spurs have got their best defence back on the pitch. Why do they keep conceding goals? And the conclusion I think we all came to is that defending is a team game, and there's, you know, particularly scant protection from midfield a lot of the time. And it's just not a proper ball winner in there. Basuma's showed flashes of being able to do it. Bentancur is not a proper six for me. You know, he's better on the ball than off it, really. He's a really elegant player who I like, but I think he's more of the box-to-box star guy. And they just don't have a Rodri or a Rice or that kind of player, or a João Paulinho, or, you know, whoever. And I think they could do with one, or then, you know, they're going to keep having these problems with control and conceding, and there'll be too much pressure on the defence. So I wonder if that's a consideration in the transfer window. But we're kind of told it's not a priority because Gray and Bergvall have done so well in pre-season. But I think you're asking quite a lot of Gray if he's going to sort of be the leading number six for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree. It is a lot to throw him in already, but when you consider his price tag, it's not a player who's just come in to make up the numbers. And I think, all right, it was Hearts, so it's difficult to draw too many conclusions from the level of position they were playing. But I thought there was quite a lot to see in that first half performance that he put in against them, albeit at centre-back, that suggests that he is ready to put in those sort of stronger challenges than the rest of the profiles of defensive midfielders that Spurs have got, which is quite encouraging. And then just, you know, your wide point about the team defending. I know Brennan Johnson came in for a bit of criticism after the game, you know, for missing chances. You know, his touch was a bit heavy at times. But one thing I did like about him a lot, along with Solanke, which was to be expected, was the work rate they put in off the ball. There was one moment where Johnson put in this brilliant sliding challenge on, I forget which player it was for Leicester, but it was a really, really sort of crunching challenge and won the ball very cleanly and then proceeded to lose it. But the first bit was encouraging, and you can see why, along with his pace and his ability to get into the far post, and if he adds that work rate to his game, you can see why Postecoglou likes him in this system. So if there's more of that coming from his forward players, then that should lead itself to hopefully a better sort of better defensive performances. But you are right when it comes to that holding midfielder, with the way Udogie and Porro just sort of wander forward a lot. Not wander, because they're, you know, under instruction, but get forward so much. It really does feel like someone who can marshal his defence a bit better and put in those kind of tackles is even more imperative to this Tottenham side compared to your average team.
Which is why, you know, Basuma is important at the moment. And what I don't really understand by the quote is, you know, as you've both alluded to, how long he's going to be sidelined for. What does Postecoglou mean when he says that Basuma's got to win back the trust of the team? Is he doing that on the training ground? Is he doing it by not, you know, spending his weekends doing silly things? Or does he do it by getting back into the team and producing 90-minute consistent performances as he did at the start of last season?
Well, he was asked literally that question by James Ollie of ESPN. You know, what does he do to do this at the time in that press conference? And his answer was behaviour, mate, and went on a bit further on. But it was how he conducts himself. And that doesn't mean that he won't get into the team straight away. But he's an influential player who Postecoglou has put a lot of faith in after a difficult first season. You know, Papsar, for example, sees him as his big brother. He's talked about that before, Sar, that connection with Basuma. And there are a lot of young players, as we all know, in this Spurs squad. So when Basuma does what he does, whether you think it's, you know, that much of a misdemeanor or not, it just doesn't set a good example at the very least. And that's, I think, what Postecoglou is referring to. That doesn't necessarily mean he won't pick him, but I guess it means what it means. If he can't sort out his behaviour and not have these kind of indiscretions long term, then I don't think that's the kind of player that Postecoglou is going to want influencing the rest of his younger players. That doesn't mean that he won't play the next game or some games this season, but if it's something that crops up again, doesn't have to be exactly the same kind of offence, but similar things, then no one's going to be shocked within the next year if he's end up getting shipped out of the team.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, isn't it? We made the point several times last season how good he was until he got sent off at Luton, and then he was never quite the same again. I thought actually he was brilliant first 20, 25 minutes against Bayern Munich, and then he faded a little bit, and then we get the headlines as well. So it doesn't quite seem to be happening at the moment. It didn't happen for Timo Werner, by the way, when he came on the other night. I know we've spent hours discussing whether or not he's got a part to play, but I'm looking forward to seeing Odubert sooner rather than later. It was a bit of a surprise transfer move. Do we expect any other business boys before the window slams shut at the end of the month?
I think that there might be one or two more, yeah. I mean, Odubert completely came from nowhere, which you alluded to there, and I think that is testament to the new way that the Spurs recruitment team works. Johan Lange, we're told, kind of likes to work in the shadows, and he's not speaking to reporters in the same way that Paratici was when he was in the role. So there's every chance that Spurs are kind of cracking on with more deals that are kind of on the hush-hush as we speak. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think looking at the squad, Spurs are still a top number six and a top winger away from having the first 11 to really challenge City and Arsenal. But as Tom's kind of suggested, there's obviously a sense that Gray will grow into that top number six in a year or two, and that Odubert or perhaps Bergvall or perhaps Johnson will grow into the top winger. So I do think, looking at the business they've done, Spurs, it feels like they're taking a bit more of a medium-term view, doesn't it? They're building a team, as I said to Tom the other day, that it looks like it could win the league in a kind of post-Guardiola and maybe even post-Manchester City Premier League landscape, depending on what happens at City's case against the Premier League. It doesn't look to me like they're building a team and thinking, we're going to win the league this season. It looks like they're thinking, well, you know, next year or the year after. Mikey Moore's another one who could grow into that kind of world-class winger quite easily if he carries on the same trajectory. So, yeah, I think there could be more business. You feel like probably it will be more the same, more young players that, who aren't necessarily going to trouble the first 11 right now, but full of potential.
And, in terms of players leaving, I'm just wondering about Richarlison, who came on, could have won it, in the last couple of minutes at Leicester on Monday night. But, he's gone down the pegging order, obviously. He's been linked with, Saudi Arabia. I mean, I hope he stays, because obviously we have, except for that number six position, got really good options just about everywhere else. But I'm just wondering if he's the sort of player Tottenham will want to have on the bench, perhaps getting frustrated. Tom, what's your gut feeling as to what might happen there?
I think, as I sort of said consistently, that if Tottenham got the offer they wanted, they would sell him. I think the only place at the moment that might come from is Saudi Arabia. And he's made it quite clear that he doesn't want to go there. He's spoken publicly about actually having an offer from Saudi Arabia, which would have been a lot of money, but he didn't want to leave Premier League. He still sees his position in the Brazil squad as very important to him, and he doesn't see moving to Saudi as being helpful to that. He's talked about, or he's posted on social media about Tottenham being his home. And I don't think, Ange would have an issue with keeping him at all. Like, he's spoken publicly about, him being an asset, but there's no doubt that Dominic Solanke has come in to be the number one central striker. It was interesting when Richarlison came on, actually, that he went out wide. So I wonder if that might happen more often. I also thought, you referenced Werner. I see him much better on the left than on the right. He went on the right, and that kind of sort of spoke to that. And then when you look at the squad overall, I don't disagree with Dan about potentially a couple of other signings, but if everyone's fit just as it is at the moment and nobody else goes, and there aren't that many, from what I can tell, obvious outgoings, apart from, you know, Richard, you know, there's a reason you're asking about Richarlison, and even that doesn't seem, you know, massively likely at the moment. There's actually quite a big, there's a big amount of players that are going to have to try and fit into this, into the squad. And I think quite a few are going to be, you know, left out of the out of the matchday squad on quite a regular basis. So I don't know where there's massive room for more players. I would have thought with the how important the wing, the fullbacks are to Ange's system, that a player that can come in for Udogie, who will, you know, get injured or get suspended at some point this season, would be quite crucial because it's such a specific profile of player. But from by all accounts, it sounds like that's not that likely at the moment. So I find that quite interesting. You know, in terms of sort of top level sort of players who are going to come in for the first team, maybe they've got something under the hat. And as Dan rightly pointed out, Odegaard is an example of that. But then again, you know, Odegaard, nearly 30 million. Archie Gray, 40 million when you considered Rodon being part of it. These are big fees for Tottenham. And they don't spend that kind of money on players who are not going to have a part to play this season. So if you bring more players in, what happens to those guys?
Just on outgoings, I suppose that there are a few who I think we expect to go now. I mean, obviously, Lo Celso and Reguilon are on the transfer list.
Of course.
I think they're looking
kind of discounted them
for a loan. Yeah, fair enough. I think Solomon sounds like he's going to go out on loan or maybe even a permanent, because there's a feeling that I think he just needs games after last year. And then probably Ashley Phillips, Alfie Devine will go on loan. And then suddenly, I guess there's a little bit of room to play with in the squad.
One player who has gone, and I haven't had a chance to say anything about it yet, but I'd like to, is Oliver Skipp. Now, a Leicester player, of course, and he came in for a lot of stick, did Skipp, and at times I could understand why certain sections of the crowd were getting frustrated with him. But you know what? Top player in terms of giving 100%. I'll never forget his goal against Chelsea. He clearly loved playing for Spurs. I've heard lovely stories about how he, when he was injured, he took the tube once to walk down the Seven Sisters Road and just sample the atmosphere with the fans before watching a Spurs-Arsenal game. So personally, I wish him a lot of luck. I think he's a really good player. And it'd be fascinating actually to see how Winks and Skip get on this season. I mean, God forbid, if Leicester finish above us in the league with a more productive midfield, then it's time for us all to go and live in the Himalayas, isn't it? But, you know, I think he should leave with the goodwill of all Spurs fans. Would you not agree with that, Dan?
Yeah, totally. And I think he probably does leave with the goodwill of every sensible Spurs fan, you know, notwithstanding a few idiots on social media. Yeah, I mean, I always felt like that injury that Skip got when he was just kind of coming up under Conte was really unfortunate for him, because Mourinho loved him, Conte loved him. And you could say that says something about him as a player. He is a little bit of a kind of water carrier who sort of suits certain managers more than he suits Ange, obviously. But, you know, it felt like then he was on his way to just kind of making himself a really important player in the Spurs team and really establishing himself. And then he just got this horrendous injury, and there was this spell that I kind of remember very well where Conte kind of kept coming in every week and saying how much he wanted Oliver Skipp to come back and kind of piling pressure on the medical staff, saying they've got to fix Oliver Skipp, which seems a bit strange to look back on now. But, had it not been for that, I think he would have had a lot more appearances for Spurs and he would have been a lot more established. And, yeah, it felt a little bit like a kind of not lost season for him last year, but I don't think he developed particularly. He was largely a substitute late in games. And I think there was a sense that as much as he's a good footballer, a very good footballer and a very, very good pro, he's not really an Ange footballer. He's not got that technical quality or that kind of attacking spark that I think Ange wants. But I think he'll go to Leicester and kind of like Winks, get games under his belt and prove himself a very capable player.
It's a classic case of a transfer that suits everyone. involved. Obviously, Spurs get a pretty good transfer fee. The only downside for them is this homegrown issue, where currently they may have to not take a fully 25-man contingent in the Europa League as a result of not having enough homegrown players. But I think they can manage that. Leicester get a player who should improve their first team, but and is, you know, an asset for the future. But if they do go down, which I think is quite possible, and they're probably gearing up for that, particularly if they get a points deduction, is someone that should be a really top player in the Championship, as he proved years ago at Norwich. And then for Skip, you know, as Dan pointed out, that injury just absolutely killed him, didn't he? And I remember covering the under 21 Euros, which England won, a lot of Spurs fans just presuming he'd go into the team, and he hardly featured. Angel Gomez was the holding midfielder and was brilliant. So he has gone a little bit backwards due to that injury, and then Ange coming in, not really suiting his style. I just wanted to, I don't know, near to finishing, I just wanted to ask you, Marcus, as the sort of almost resident fan, regarding sort of Spurs' squad and the age profile, how excited are you about, you know, all these teenagers and you know, perhaps are Destiny Adogi, they're only 21, or are you concerned about a lack of experience?
Yeah, I'm concerned. You know, to be honest with you, Tom, I don't care how old anybody is, if they're good enough and they're going to help us go on a run and, God forbid, actually win something, then if they're 56 or 16, it's not an issue. But it did strike me the other night that, you know, there's a lot of promise at the club, but there's been a lot of promise at the club since I started supporting them back in 1970 something. So there's nothing new in that regard. And I felt that there was an inexperienced look to the team in the closing stages of the game on Monday night. And, you know, just in general terms, by the way, and I know Dan will have a go at me again, but I am so angry at Tottenham's inability to pass out properly from the back. It's just not good enough. And, you know, yeah, I'm an old man shouting at the clouds, Dan, and it's the future and all the rest of it. It's not, if we keep getting ourselves into trouble. And still the issue, defending set pieces, is not being resolved. These are the things that concern me. And I don't care if it's a teenager or a 40-year-old who's trying to defend those set pieces. There are blatant flaws still within the system. And also, the ridiculous number of fouls that we give away, particularly when time is running out. Silly little niggly fouls that break up play, take out 45 seconds, crucially towards the end of the game, where, again, we were on top. These are things that concern me. And, you know, I think Bergvall looks brilliant. I'm really excited to see how Archie Gray develops. I'm still a fan of Brennan Johnson. I think he's going to come good. But there are some fundamental flaws for me. And Dan, I know you always shake your head, and I understand what you're saying, that this is the way forward now, play out from the back, but Spurs aren't able to do it. Vicario's distribution is poor, and technically some of the players, either it's technical or certainly the positions, the body positions they get themselves into, you can see what's happening. We're going to give it away again, and we are going to offer cheap chances to teams that aren't as good as us. And I'm sorry, but it really pisses me off.
Do you want me to respond to this?
Yes.
I mean, I can't actually recall. Did Vicario kind of make a mistake playing out from the back that led to a goal last season? I know there were two in pre-season before you say that, but I mean, I think pre-season's the time you want to get them out of the way, right? Look, the way I see it, and it's quite a binary way, is there's a way you've got to play now if you want to be a top team and win things, because that is how football works now, because that is what Guardiola and other managers have done to the game. And
hang on, so just because they have, why do we have, Burnley, but hang on, it was like Burnley last season, Dan, and that's one of the reasons they got relegated, because Company tried to play this way, the right way, with a goalkeeper, by the way, towards the end of the season, who couldn't pass, you know, a ball two yards. Sometimes you've got to adapt a little bit to your playing staff.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, but I don't. I think Spurs do have the personnel to play out from the back. You know, they've got a goalkeeper who's pretty good with his feet, and they've got four really technically gifted defenders who in the starting 11. Yeah,
But how many times do they give it away? Porro, I mean, I love him as well as a player bursting forward, but he's vulnerable. When that ball's played out to him in that right back position, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. He's going to stumble over here. And I tell you what, Vicario's going to have to make a save in the next 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason Spurs and other teams do that is because you cannot win anything. You cannot be a top team in football now without doing it. It's what you have to do. And the reason teams do it, even though it does lead to chances being conceded, is because the risk is outweighed by the reward. So you will create more chances playing that way than you will concede. And that's the whole idea. You draw out the opposition, you play through them, and you know, it's important to your attacking. I think adaptability is an interesting point that I'm sure we'll end up coming back to on this podcast, because we talked about that a lot last year. And I do think within the framework of Ange's non-negotiables, which we know are playing out from the back, inverting the fullbacks, dominating the ball, getting men forward, within that framework, that's not going to change. Those non-negotiables aren't going to change. But I do think, you know, that there is a case, and me and Tom touched on it on the last pod we did, that Ange has to be a bit more adaptable and pragmatic within that structure and system, and maybe occasionally say, well, look, we're playing City, we're going to switch up the formation, or we're going to do something different. And he did that in the City game last year, the 2-0 defeat that all the Spurs fans wanted to lose. And it was a good performance, and Son very nearly grabbed a point. And I'd like to see, you know, him do more of that. But I don't honestly think this is the issue from Leicester, which is kind of what we're talking about now. The issue for me from Leicester actually was just kind of maybe game savviness and experience and kind of controlling the game when you're 1-0 up. Spurs don't do that as well as they should. You know, they're not a team that will get into a position of strength and just hold the other team at an arm's length yet. And I think that's where they need to get to.
Finally, boys, and I know it's only the second game of the season on Saturday, but how important is this Everton match? Bearing in mind their start, I mean, their bottom, goal difference. If Spurs were to stumble ahead of matches against Newcastle and Arsenal, will we, you know, suddenly feel a very cold shiver, albeit still in August, around N17? Tom?
Well, we did say towards the end of last season, when we were looking ahead to the new campaign, that potentially Ange needed a pretty good start because of the way it all petered out last season. And, you know, in his own words, they lost their way. That was the phrase that he used when he did an in-house interview at the start of pre-season, talking about the back end of his first season. 5 defeats in 7. That game against Man City was, whatever happens, I think with his tenure, will still be a reference point. Whether it be, you know, he goes on to be massively successful and wins the Tottenham a trophy, they'll talk about that game being pivotal in the obstacles he had to overcome in the first season. Or if it doesn't end up well, that'll you know, and he doesn't last the season, then that will be, you know, for another reason that will be looked as the, you know, the start where it started to fray. And obviously, with every performance that is unconvincing, and I would add that Leicester game in the other day into that because of the way it turned out, then yeah, pressure grows. But and you look at the fixtures to come, and they're hard. We talked about the season being like an interesting start to the season, because there's quite a lot of possibility that could really be a springboard to genuine success because of the games coming up, but also very, very difficult. And you know, Everton at home, Tottenham got a pretty good record over them. They're obviously struggling, but you'd expect Dyche to have quite a big reaction to that performance the other day. They'll probably be very hard to break down. But I guess generally with Spurs, even towards that tricky run towards the end of the season, I don't really have a lot of fears with them over carving out chances, and even less so now with Solanke in the team. So I think they will create chances. It's just a matter of taking them and making sure they're not sort of, you know, brittle at the back, which is what they showed back in the last season, hints in the second half yesterday. But yeah, in a long-winded answer to your question, it is quite important. It's suddenly more important than we probably saw coming.
Yeah, I would concur with that. Tom, thank you. Dan Kilpatrick, thank you. Apologies again to Alan Partridge and David Brent. who was scandalously abused at the start of this podcast, and to James Maddison as well. You know, it's early days, and it's amazing how, I've got to say, first 20 minutes Monday night, this is amazing. This is incredible. And by the end of the game, I'm thinking the season's over already. But that's the nature of being a Spurs fan. But no doubt we'll hopefully get a reaction podcast shortly after the game against Everton on Saturday. Danny Kaye from the Evening Standard, thank you very much indeed. Tom Barkley from The Sun, thank you. The other Tom is away on holiday, some exotic location, but I think he's back next week. So keep the faith, everybody. Enjoy Saturday. And of course, come on, you Spurs.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.